Well, I like television series, but I like to watch ones that are already complete. Because I don't like to get to the end of season one, and there's this cliffhanger ending, and now I've got to wait 6 months for season two to come on. Or we don't have cable, so I've got to wait 2 years for season two to come on Netflix. I don't like that. And you don't like that either, I'm sure. Now, I mean, I guess there's a little value in stirring up some anticipation, right? Generating more interest, getting some discussion going. But thankfully, when it comes to the story of God's people in Egypt, we don't have to wait. Page 48 of my Bible is, we find Genesis chapter 50 and verse 26. That's the last verse. Page 49, it's not numbered, but page 49 of my Bible, we find Exodus chapter 1, verse 1. And it begins, "These are the names of the sons of Israel who came to Egypt with Jacob, each with his household." Now, I want to tell you, not one of you, I'm sure, is looking at a Bible that the first word in Exodus chapter 1, verse 1 is "and." Some of it might be "now." Some of it's "these." But in the Hebrew, it's "and." Which is interesting, right? What is "and"? What part of speech? Is it a part of speech? It's a conjunction. It is called a part of speech, right? Is that right, English speakers? Thank you. It is a conjunction. And it is a coordinated conjunction. It's different from other conjunctions like "but" or "or." Right? What does "and" mean? It puts the things together. And so if we're looking at the Hebrew, if we're not, we're looking at the English, but we understand that it was written originally in the Hebrew, we say they embalmed him and he was put in a coffin in Egypt, and these are the names of the sons of Israel. It's a continuation of the story of God's people. Amen. And that's really what we see throughout the scripture, right? A continuation of the story of God's people. And the story of God's people is still being told today through us. We are God's people today. But these are the names of the sons of Israel who came to Egypt with Jacob, each with his household: Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah, Israel, Zebulun, and Benjamin, Dan, and Naphtali, Gad, and Asher. All the descendants of Jacob were 70 persons. Joseph was already in Egypt, and Joseph died, and all his brothers, and all that generation. But the people of Israel were fruitful and increased greatly. They multiplied and grew exceedingly strong, so that the land was filled with them. The Israelites were a blessing. Egypt. From the time Joseph showed up in Egypt, the Egyptians began to be blessed. And even as these others, the rest of his family comes into Egypt, they continue to be blessed. Deliverer of those people. And if you just stop at these first seven verses, you don't see the need for deliverance. Because you don't see any reason why anybody would be upset with these people living in this place. They're being blessed. They're a blessing to the land. But what's the problem? There was beginning to be too many of them. They weren't necessarily outnumbering the Egyptians, but if there was another nation that would come in and try to overthrow the Egyptians, if the Israelites sided with them, then the Egyptians would be in trouble. And so there's a problem. Exodus 12, 37, Exodus 38, 26, we kind of get the idea that there were more than 600,000 men at this time who were 20 years or older. 600,000 men. So then you add in the women, because there were women there. Then you add in the children. And that's where you come up with these estimates of 1.5 million, 2 million plus Israelites living as resident aliens in Egypt. Pharaoh wasn't happy with this rapid multiplication of the Israelites.
Also, they were living in the most productive area of Egypt, the land of Goshen. So they're taking away the benefits of the land. And the land is very scarce, the good land.
Okay.
And the Egyptians also at this time, when Joseph was the overseer, the second in command, weren't the Egyptians sold their labor to be fed and did that continue? That's
yes.
What I have a question on.
Yes, the Egyptians were slaves to Pharaoh.
Yes.
But the Israelites were not.
Were not. So the Egyptians are looking at these guys that have been just living in the best land and they're not being slaves to Pharaoh. A lot of jealousy might be good about them and said.
Beginning in Genesis, Exodus is about 390 years. They stayed 430 years. So Moses had to be 40 when he came back. So it'd be 430 years when that exited Egypt. But this is about 390 years. That's how much they multiplied in that 390 years.
That's right. And that's pretty rapid. So Pharaoh, let's read verses 8 through 14. Now there arose a new king over Egypt. Here's the problem, or a problem, who did not know Joseph. And he said to his people, behold, the people of Israel are too many and too mighty for us. Come, let us deal shrewdly with them, lest they multiply, and if war breaks out, they join our enemies and fight against us and escape from the land. Therefore they sent taskmasters over them to afflict them with heavy burdens. They built for Pharaoh store cities, Pithom and Ramses. But the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied, and the more they spread wrong. And the Egyptians were in dread of the people of Israel. So they ruthlessly made the people of Israel work as slaves, and made their lives bitter with hard service, and mortar and bricks, and all kinds of works in the field. And all their work, they ruthlessly made them work as slaves. So what was step one of Pharaoh's plan to stop the growth of the Israelite people? Let's work them to death. That's it. Let's cause problems for the adults. Let's take care, let's work them so hard that they can't do anything else. And, you know, God told Abraham in Genesis 15 that his descendants would go into a strange country, that they would be enslaved, that they would be mistreated, that they would be oppressed. But God also promised he would set them free. by his power at the right time. And you know, it's one of the hardest things for us to do is to wait. When we decide we need something, or when we decide we want something, when do we need it? When do we want it?
Right now.
Right now. That's right. And we even if we're asking God for something, and I think usually in the back of our mind, there's probably this thought, well, yes, God, we know things will happen in your time, but if your time can line up with my time, that'd be great. Chris.
Like, that's, I guess the point I wanted to make was the Pharaoh did not know Joseph. And sometimes we, in some fashion, hang on to the exact same thing. Do you remember when we had this preacher and we did this, or we did that, and remember when we built this building? We hang on to those things. But just as these people, there is still redemption in plan. And it was not linked to what had happened or someone a lot of the time. The only someone that redemption hinges on is Jesus himself.
That's right.
And so we get tied up many times into things that are historical. And a good friend used to say, you know, if that was a concern, it was always Shibboleth. You know, it doesn't matter how I pronounce it, but it doesn't matter if I know it. All I need to know is the plan of redemption, and the whole plan, which I think is the entirety of Genesis 2, the crossing over the Jordan, where they leave stones in the Jordan. I mean, there's a whole lot of symbolism and shadow in that crossing over the Jordan. And I think it's all the same message. It's all about redemption. Genesis chapter 3.
That's right. Well, and you know, it's interesting that for so many years people remembered Joseph, but then they forgot. When they crossed the Jordan, they set up those piles of stone. How many generations was it before they forgot? One. Right? After Joshua died, and after all the people of that generation died, there rose up, Genesis 2 tells us, there rose up another generation after them that knew not God. How does that happen?
It's got to be.
It's like this. We remember God when things are going good. We're all happy and glad because things are going good. But when things go bad, it's like hectic and chaos, and we don't want to be around. We only need to put him on the shelf. We got what we wanted out of him. He's no longer going to use to us.
Sure. That is one way some people look at it. I think that another way people can look at it is when things are going good, we don't need God.
Right.
We don't have to think about these things. We don't have to remember these things. We got this on our own. And then when things turn bad, now it's time to blame God. We remember God when things go bad, but he gets the blame. We get the credit. He gets the blame. That's a problem. God gets all the credit, or ought to get all the credit. But these Egyptian taskmasters worked them ruthlessly. They had them building cities. They had them working in the fields. But it was not successful. Because, yes, Pharaoh had been blessed while Joseph was there, but it wasn't because of anything Pharaoh did. It was because of God. God was showering these blessings on the Egyptians for the sake of Joseph. Now, these slaves are working and working and working and working, but they continue to grow. They continue to spread out. The plan was not working. And it's interesting that, and we'll get into, there's two more steps to this plan, and it always fails, right? Because anytime you make a plan against God, you're going to fail. You cannot succeed in making a plan against God. Who do you think would have the best chance for success? If they were going to make a plan to defeat God, who would have the best chance? Probably Satan, right? Was Satan successful?
No.
No, now Satan's still trying. And I think about the Apostle Paul in Acts chapter 7. The church is being persecuted. And you know, Stephen is there with the Pharisees, and he's just railing against them, right? He's telling them like it is. And they stone him to death. And it seems as though a man by the name of Saul of Tarsus is overseeing these proceedings. Stephen dies. And Saul of Tarsus probably thinks, it worked. Look at the people. They're going everywhere. They're leaving Jerusalem just like we hoped. But it didn't work, did it? Acts chapter 8, verse 1. They went everywhere preaching the word. Everywhere preaching the word. The plan backfired. Pharaoh had a plan here. It backfired. Mark.
Reminds me of Gamaliel when he said, if these teachings are of man, they're fed. But if this is a God organization, this will succeed. And that's a lot of wisdom in that little bit.
That's right. There's no plan that we can come up with that will overtake or overrule or override God's plan. God's plan will always succeed. So he tries to work the adults to death. No luck there. In fact, it backfires. So step two was to kill all the Jewish boys as soon as they're born. Right? We see that in verses 15 through 21. And if that plan had succeeded, it wouldn't take long to wipe out the Israelites. The next generation of fathers would be non-existent. And the daughters, well, they would grow up and they would marry Egyptians and just be sort of absorbed into the Egyptian race, the Egyptian nation. Step two was to kill the boys of birth. Step three was. Yes. Yes. Zips. It matters how we say these names, doesn't it, Chris? Sifra and Pua? I don't know how to say it. Shifra and Pua were midwives, Jewish midwives. And we'll pick up talking about them and Pharaoh's other plans to outsmart God and his people. And we'll pick up, finish chapter 1 and get into chapter 2 next week. Thank you for your comments and attention.